about, it's a true story, and it's about a mission effort, and we call it the Wild Chicken Ministry. That's right, the Wild Chicken Ministry. We at Health Talents International worked with a volunteer who, while in medical school, did some volunteer work in another Central American country. And in this village where this volunteer worked, he relayed a story that happened while he was working in this village with his mission group. The U.S. Americans that were volunteering noticed a lot of wild chickens wandering about. And so, being the good U.S. Americans that they were, they decided to do a good deed, and they gathered up these chickens, and then they made sure they were distributed fairly to all the people in the village. And so now all the wild chickens had homes. They were no longer wandering around. And the people could own chickens, and that was good for their local economy, or so they thought. It was well-intentioned. The problem, though, was that these were not wild chickens. They were free-range chickens, and they were the property of some of the villagers. So you can imagine what took place when the gringos left town. The locals put things back in order. The chickens went back to their rightful owners, and they didn't tell the volunteers about this mistake. So why did the community in this village continue to embrace these U.S. volunteers? Well, this group would bring gifts and goods, money, and, you know, quite frankly, they enjoyed their company. So they never told them about this mistake. This wild chicken ministry resulted in some unintended consequences. And so you have to ask, if this group hadn't invested enough to know the local village culture to understand that these chickens weren't wild, how much credibility could they really have in proclaiming the gospel of Christ? Did they treat the people, they treated them with good intentions, but did they respect the dignity of this culture? And did they potentially start to create an unhealthy dependency? And I think that is what happened. And it's stories like this why we wanted to come today to talk to you, because dignity matters. Dignity and missions matters. I'm Cynthia Allen, and I know some of you, and I'm from Sacramento, California. I've been working with Health Talents as a volunteer for 8 or 9 years with Rick Harper here. Rick is from Searcy, Arkansas, and I'm on the board of directors of Health Talents, and I'm very excited to share with you some of the work that we do, but especially in the light of how we protect dignity in missions. And so we think it's very important to give people a chance to maintain that dignity. When we go in, we need to avoid unhealthy dependency or long-term dependency. Certainly, we can help and we can guide, but we need to help people sustain themselves. And to do this, we need to develop relationships, alliances, partnerships, as opposed to patronage. We need to examine our purpose, why we're there, and we need to re-examine what is the need, and are we fulfilling a need that they have, or are we really fulfilling a need that we have? And that's an important question to ask. Sometimes it's well-meaning compassion. Sometimes it's selfish because it makes us feel better about ourselves. We may need to look at people through a different lens instead of a paternalistic view or a lens of they need us. We need to say, what is their need? What is it that helps them to grow? And this is where we look at Jesus to see how Jesus treated people, and he treated them with dignity. He left the common person, and that was the person whose heart was on the line. He left those people with more dignity than they had when they met him. And that is our goal, too, to do. So we're going to take a closer look at the value of dignity in missions. Rick is going to take us into more discussion of that. And we want to share with you now a brief video that will give you an overview of Health Talents International. And then Rick will unpack that a little bit more for us and share with you. Thank you.
Esperanza.
Misericordia. Amor.
Servicio.
This is Guatemala.
situated at the top of Central America. This is a land rich in natural resources, known as much for its active volcanoes and rich coffee as for its warm hospitality and tourism. And its lush green interior landscape makes Guatemala a tropical paradise that's second to none. Guatemala is called El Corazón del Mundo Maya, the heart of the Mayan world. And to this day, remnants of a once great civilization can still be found. Yet, as you look deep into the heart of Guatemala, you will find many of its people hurting and in need. Malnutrition, dirty water, inadequate health care and education. This is the plight of the faces of Guatemala. Health Talents International recognized the plight of these humble people and has ministered to them with medical care since 1978. Through mobile medical clinics, we are often the first point of contact that offers hope for healing. The relationships built from these mobile medical clinics changes lives and enables us to open the door for conversations about health, hygiene, education, and ultimately, the love of Christ. Although public education is free, many Guatemalan children attend only 4 years of school, dropping out to scrape together a living on the streets or work in the fields. But through the ABC program, students discover that there is hope. With encouragement and loving direction from Health Talents and the local church community, the children have a chance to stay in school. And through Health Talents scholarship opportunities, many will continue their education in high school or technical school, and even medical school.
Desde que inicié con la carrera, tenía un propósito, y gracias a Dios mi propósito sigue siendo el mismo, que esa es mi forma de servir a Dios. Y no lo hubiera logrado si no hubiera sido por talento.
The life of Dr. Paz has changed. And because of this, she will in turn change the lives of many in her community, giving other indigenous young women a glimpse of what their future can be. Our team of in-country professionals, along with volunteers from the United States, shows the love of Christ in action. Surgeons, nurses, dentists, translators, and compassionate caregivers come together to weave a rich fabric of service. Each year, more than 600 surgeries are successfully bringing relief and peace to the lives touched by these caring hands.
Health Talents International is an organization that goes about loving people in other countries in a holistic fashion. The word on the street is that Jesus works here. When they walk into our facilities, they know that we're working here with His hands.
The lives of children with tumors and other maladies are transformed forever. Imagine how the anxiety and despair of this mother turns to joy, excitement, and gratitude when her baby Amaryllis undergoes cleft surgery. Without it, malnutrition would have been a certainty, and this baby would have been ostracized. But now, baby Amaryllis has a chance for a full and joyous life. The faces of Guatemala are becoming faces of hope. That's why we're here. That's why we do this. We're giving hope, healing bodies, opening doors, and changing lives. Who knows what the future holds for the faces of Guatemala?
This is Guatemala.
This is Guatemala.
This is Health Talents International.
All right, we'll transition here. Get this to work.
While he's doing that, I'll tell you a little bit about Rick Harper. He is our executive director, and he's based in Searcy, Arkansas. He's been associated with Health Talents for 30 years as a volunteer, as a board member, but for the last 12, 13 years as our executive director. Prior to working for Health Talents, he worked in the food industry.
Yes.
For Cisco, I believe. And so we welcome Rick to take us a little further in this discussion.
All right, thank you. Cynthia will man the PowerPoint. They don't have a clicker anymore. We're going to have to just do the old-fashioned enter as we go along, so I'll give her the high side. As I share with you Health Talent's approach to medical advancements, and I'll ask you to keep in mind that this is just the best way we have found to share the gospel. There are other approaches to medical missions and medical evangelism or missions in general. But we wanted to share with you from the medical evangelism perspective how we can realize kingdom growth and at the same time treat those we're serving and teaching with great dignity. I distinguish between medical evangelism and medical missions this way. And many of you have been on medical mission trips. Okay? Medical mission trips are typically an event. You do it once and you may never do it again, or you may do it once a year for the rest of your life. Medical evangelism is relational. It's in a process. So that's why we use that method. Jesus taught and Jesus healed. So we're going to teach and we're going to heal. We have 62 on our team in Guatemala. 3 are North Americans, the rest are national. And we think that's a pretty healthy ratio. So we try and grow our own Christian healthcare providers. And I'll share with you some more details on that. Well, I want you to think with me for just a moment. Cynthia, you can go ahead and hit the next slide. I want you to think from a theological perspective how important it must be to God that we treat others with dignity, and we can consider that by looking at how He treated us. Okay? God treats us with dignity, and you can go to many scriptures, but I couldn't find a better one to look at than the fact that He made us in His own image. It's about as good as it gets, okay? If He thinks enough of us to create us in His image, He's treating us with the utmost dignity and respect. Go ahead, Cynthia. He trusts us to decide what we're going to do, whether or not we choose to love, honor, and obey Him, or we choose not to. Now, as some of you are parents and grandparents, you know how difficult it is when you begin to impart some of that trust to your children in making decisions on their own. And God has trusted us to do that. He has entrusted us with sharing His message. Okay? He could do it, I guess, with a loudspeaker from heaven, but He did it by sending His Son and then charging us to go out there and share that message. And finally, He entrusts us to house His Spirit. Now, that's a pretty good deal, okay? Oh, just briefly to frame this from a dignity perspective, consider how God treats us, and then let's try and move that into our efforts in the medical mission field, medical evangelism field. So go ahead. I'm going to touch on each of the points that Cynthia did, but first I want to read what a portion of our philosophy statement. This is what God Health Talents and has since we started in the late 70s. Our practice of medical evangelism is defined as helping individuals find redemptive spiritual wholeness by speaking the truth of the good news of Jesus to them in a language they understand. And in Guatemala, where we're working, that's Spanish and Quiche. Okay? Using methods they regard as appropriate, and doing so at those times when their hearts may be most open. Now, pause there. We've all heard the phrase, people don't care what you know until they know how much you care. That's part of what's going on here. When we reach out to them with the ministry of medical evangelism, we're meeting some of those basic needs, their hearts are open. Like the mom in the video, what do you think the story was when, you know, Amarillis went back to her community and they saw that transformation? What do you think Mama's story was about the Christians who came down from North America to serve and help her? All right, next one. We are called to those whom the world has forgotten, who live at the margins of society, the abandoned ones. We are sent to serve those who will remain unserved if we do not serve them, to those to whom the usual and customary avenues to social justice and physical well-being are summarily denied. In Guatemala, these are mostly the indigenous people. They are not persecuted, rather they have been rendered invisible. We are sent to see them, and having seen them, to serve them. Now, many of you in this room are already health talent advocates. You've been down there, you've seen, and you understand why we're compelled to continue to go and to serve and minister to them in this manner. I'm going to use several stories to drive home what I believe and what we believe are the appropriate ways to minister to people and treat them with dignity and respect. This is the church building in La Fortuna. Okay? It started in 2003 when an old-fashioned door-knocking campaign took place on bamboo huts and tin walls and roofs. And church members from Chicacao and San Basilio went into La Fortuna, a displaced community where migrants had been moved off of a bankrupt plantation and relocated. And they identified some Christians who had fallen away as new Christians, and they started a small church. This is it. Okay? Tin roof, bamboo poles, and nicely painted white rocks to sort of outline their meeting area. Now, they asked us to help them build a church building, and we declined. We don't build church buildings. We don't help you put on the roof, the ceiling, the floor, the walls, the electric. That's your responsibility. Okay? Whenever they're able to build a church building in La Fortuna that meets their community's expectations, more power to them. Next slide. That's their church building now. Okay. It took them over 10 years, but it's theirs. Now, we've been in that community providing primary medical and dental care and surgical care. We've got a community development team that's been doing raised bed agriculture. We place water filters and smokeless stoves. But the responsibility for their church building is theirs. Now when the roof leaks, they don't call Rick and say, our roof's leaking. Okay? They're very proud of this. And I know pride is not always a great thing to be. But if we had built this for them, we would have robbed them of the joy they found in sacrificially building and donating it for themselves. One example of why we must take care when we're asked to help, that we look and make sure we understand what's long-term best for that community and for the health of that church. Of the more than 40 churches of Christ that we work with in Guatemala, only one of them has a minister on a U.S. payroll. And it's not our fault. He had a relationship and somebody started sending him money years ago. We believe it's healthier, and I'm sorry, preachers, Ben and others, okay? We believe it's healthier if these churches pay their own minister instead of looking to the U.S. Doesn't work everywhere, but it works in Guatemala. As a result, if you go to communities like La Fortuna, San Basilio, Chicacao, Moxville, Quinto, and you ask, who's the minister here, who's the evangelist here, you'll see half a dozen hands come up. Since nobody has been paid to do it, they've accepted the responsibility themselves. Their evangelism may not look like what ours does, but it's effective for them. And we need to, God trusted us, we need to trust them. Next slide. This is a community, it's one of our great stories, and we do have several, at least I think they're great stories. Moxville Quinto was one of the first communities that partnered with us when we expanded into the Guatemala Highlands in 2005. Now, I'll go ahead and tell you that since they partnered with us, they have torn down their church building and rebuilt it three times, and without help from us. Next slide. Okay. This is their church building now. Oh, you got to get on the right button. She'll get there. All right. That church building now holds over 1,000 people. Okay. Now, the church leadership at Moxville Quinto is incredibly evangelistic, more so than many of the other churches that we partner with. Okay. And when I say partner, when we go into a community to provide primary medical and dental care, we ask them to assume some responsibilities. Okay? We want their membership there at the church building or in some communities that's actually a home to be present, to greet us, to welcome us, to pray with the patients, to follow up with the patients when we're gone. See, we're in communities, about 20 communities, we're in at least every 2 weeks. 16 or 17 in, we're every week. Then there's a few we're only in once a month. But we have a regular enough presence that we're able to provide good medical care. What we're not there often enough to do is to have good one-on-one traditional evangelism. Traditional evangelism to me is when you sit down and you open the Word. So our partnership means we've not allowed that church we're partnering with to delegate that responsibility to us. We're going to do the medical evangelism side. They're going to do the traditional evangelism side. So next slide, Julie. Cynthia. Co-worker Julie, thinking up right now.
I am sorry.
I think if you just hit enter.
Maybe that's it.
Well, no, that's a pretty thing, because that's my wife.
All right, let's go back up here. We'll start this slideshow from current slide. And if you'll hit that button right there.
Okay.
I think. There you go. All right, I've double-clicked it, so you see the end of the story.
This same congregation, Moxoquinto, we had a clinic there. It's been probably over 3 years now. And we had a young lady come to our clinic named Josefa. She had vision trouble. And Dakota's an optometrist, so he understands that. But she didn't require surgery. We were able to treat her medicinally, and her vision was restored. That's reason for rejoicing in and of itself. Well, the church elders at Moxoquinto began to study with her, and she became a Christian. This man, Daddy, the chief Mayan priest in Moxoquinto, was not real happy. Okay? His daughter had walked away from her Christian faith, from her pagan faith, to become a Christian. That was generations of her family heritage that she gave up. I compare it to myself. I live in Searcy, Arkansas, and I'm blessed to serve as an elder at the College Church of Christ in Searcy, and there's more than 40 of us, so there's plenty of us, okay? If my daughter walked away from her Christian faith and declared she was a pagan, I'd feel just like Geronimo. Well, Geronimo came to our clinics, and he'd argue, and he'd belittle, and he'd make fun, but you see the good picture at the bottom. Eventually, a day came when he said, "No more. No more a child of the corn. I'm ready to be a child of God." So, the king of Moxoquinto, the chief high priest, became a Christian, along with his wife, Juana. Now, Juana passed away in December of 2013, and it was the elders at Moxoquinto she asked to preach her funeral. So you see, by going in and partnering with Moxoquinto, we did our role providing medical and dental care and teaching. By entrusting the church leadership at Moxoquinto with the responsibility to follow up with her and study with her and teach her, she became a Christian, as did her father and her mother. When some of his friends asked Geronimo why he became a Christian, he said, "When I was sick, they came and prayed with me. You didn't." He recognized that instead of following multiple gods and always doing offerings and making prayers in hopes that they didn't do anything bad to you, he discovered a God who loved you and a people who showed that love by the way they lived. Go on, Cynthia. All right. Another example of how we have healthy partnerships. This young lady was in our ABC program, and we have literature here, and some of it's been passed out. You're welcome to grab it. ABC is Health Talents Answer to World Vision and Compassion International. Those are great programs too. Okay, but this is what we do. We have, by the end of the year, we'll have 860 children in this program. They will come from the churches we work with. The church leadership says this family needs help for this child to go to school. I don't get to pick that child. If I picked them, they'd all have dimples. All the little girls would, okay? But the church leadership makes that decision, and then we evaluate the applications. Then we'll find a U.S. sponsor to send $30 a month to help that child go to school. They'll receive food and clothes and tuition, what is needed to get them through their education process. Now, in Guatemala, this is a stat that's about 10 years old, but USAID said there were 2 million children not in school in Guatemala, most of them Indian girls. Well, here's Nitty and Patricia, ABC child for 10 years, sponsored by a member from Meadowbrook, Joe Summers. And Joe's health is declining. I don't know if you see him very often anymore. And he didn't do a good job of communicating with Nitty and Patricia. He was an accountant. He just wrote his check once a month and sent it off, and he'd done his good deed. Well, 10 years after being in the ABC program, she decided she wanted to go to medical school. Well, we have a scholarship program for that. We sent Nitty and Patricia to medical school, and then in November of 2013, she joined us as a physician. Is that not a sign of a healthy partnership? Okay. We helped her go to school by supplementing what her family could not. In return for being part of the ABC program, the church provided leadership there and volunteers to help with that program. She had to remain in school and be faithful in church attendance and continue to pass as she did. Next slide. This is almost the same story. This is Manuela Tambriz. Okay. Her mother used to work for us in the early days when we were up in Santo Tomas, the Chocolate area. And Manuela dreamed of wearing a scrub top with our logo. Sometimes I try so hard not to miss it, forgive me. But since she was 3 years old, she wanted to wear a scrub top with our logo. Okay? Well, ABC program school, dental school, she graduates in November. So she will be one of now 4 students we sent through dental school and 4 students through medical school. We've got another 3 who've gone through nursing school. Of the 3 Guatemalan nurses, of the 3 Central American nurses working for us right now full time, 3 went through our nursing program. 2 of our physicians went through this program. And once she graduates, 2 of our current dentists are through this program. We think that is a good model for treating them with dignity and respect, not treating them like a caretaker, not like a welfare gift, because when they graduate from medical, dental, or nursing school, they owe us a year's service for each year they receive a scholarship. Now, they're a paid employee, but we're going to pay them what we pay anyone else with that same degree. But there's this mutual relationship, and it really is a big deal in these communities, and it's a big deal to us. All right, keep going, Cynthia. I think we have to ask the question, when we consider dignity, what did Jesus do? And as we evaluate our ministries, I was in Guatemala. Well, I just flew in last night. I'm down there often, okay? But I was down there in March with an eye and orthopedic surgical team. People said, well, how did it go? I said, the blind see, the lame walk, and the good news is preached to the poor. It's pretty good. Okay? So, but as we look at what we're doing and compare it to the Scriptures, the charge we find in Scripture, you see something as simple as eye surgery. And it's a big deal, but it's very commonplace also. But they do. The patients come in today blind, and they leave, and they can see. In November of 2003, we had a patient come in. She was in her 30s. She had trauma cataracts. And she had several children already, but one she'd never seen. It was after surgery. She woke up, not woke up, but when they removed that bandage, she saw her older daughter, who she recognized, holding her baby girl she'd never seen. Oh, praise God. Pretty good day. All right. Here's little Hiro, and you've got a postcard if you want it to reference. Hiro came to our medical clinic in Cheyenne, wrapped in a blanket because he had pink eye. And we unwrap him for the blanket, and we see he's starving to death at 20 days of age. Well, we quickly put him on a a milk program. The mother passed away within a week after us seeing him. Daddy didn't know what to do. He was only feeding Hyrule warm water to have something in his belly to keep him from crying. But go ahead and hit it. Here's Hyrule at 4 months, and then one more. You can see him at 1 year. Okay. So are we effective in going into these communities and partnering with them? I'd say yes. So can you get a sense of how medical evangelism might be an effective way for you to do your missions or your ministry? And again, it won't work everywhere. This is rural. I don't know how that works in Malibu. Well, I think I know how it works in Malibu. Not so good. But there are parts of the U.S. where medical evangelism is very appropriate. All right, keep going, Cynthia, and then we'll have time for questions. Here are some keys to implementation. One, we pray perpetually. Okay. It almost seems like it's a cliche. People ask, what do you need? And they expect me to have a list of money needs, things that we have, equipment or people. Prayers is pretty much at the top of the list. Okay. We couldn't survive without it. That video that you saw of Amarillis, the Faces of Guatemala. When I was in Guatemala, February of 2013, we were shooting that video. Okay? And I'm in one part of the country shooting the video. We've got a surgical team on the coast that you saw. And I get a phone call on Sunday afternoon that one of our Bovies is down. A Bovie is an electrosurgical cautery, for those of you who are not healthcare providers. Okay? It's really important. You can't do that type of surgery, plastic and GYN, without one. So what do? They're calling me. I'm 3 hours away. I don't have a magic pill that I can just repair that bogey. So I asked Julie to call this person, Carl to call this person, and I go into the hotel where I'm staying and sit down for dinner and tell the local missionary there we need to call Tom at the Wayne Samaritano Hospital. As I'm relating the need for a bogey to Kimmel, a man across the table from me, about where Dakota is sitting, said, "Excuse me, do you need a bogey?" And I said, "Yes." He said, "Well, I've got one in my pickup."
Wow.
So we brought it in, tested it out on a mango. It worked. Hired a taxi and had it driven down to the coast to the hospital so that they could have it for surgery on Monday morning. I think that was an answered prayer. That's where I'm getting at when I say prayer is critical. Finding a bogey in the back of someone's pickup, him just happening to hear the conversation, and that's like finding the missing piece of a jigsaw puzzle in another state. All right. So, pray perpetually. Define your mission. You saw where I read a portion of our philosophy statement. Our board has done a great job of defining our ministry, our mission, and our vision. Every so often, we have to revisit it to make sure we're on track. So we have it written down. We're 41, we'll soon be 42 years old. So that's a long time for most any nonprofit or ministry. So you define it. Next one. You want to pursue mission over emotion. Now, the Wild Chicken Ministry is a great example of emotion driving what they were doing. Okay? Is it well-intentioned to gather wild chickens and make sure everybody has some? Yes. But if you don't invest enough to know that those chickens belong to somebody and that you're creating problems in the community, the thing that still hurts me the most about that is those individuals have given up almost all credibility when they try to share the gospel. People don't even know chickens. They're trying to tell me how to save my soul? Mm-hmm. So don't let your good intentions outweigh your mission. Don't help them build a church building if you've decided it's more important for them to build that church building. Don't support their local minister if you decided that it's healthier for them to support their own local minister. All right, and then finally, monitor and evaluate. Again, as we move well into our 40 years as a ministry, we have to continue to look and make sure we're doing what we plan to do, and some things we change. Okay?
I got an email last week from Dr. Quentin Dickerson, a member where Ben and Laura attend, and Ben serves as a minister. Okay, you know, we need to start looking again the next plan. Where are we going to be in 5 or 10 years? Because we just finished the 5-year plan, and I'm taking a breath. But we've got to look for where do we go next? What are we doing now that we didn't intend to do? Where is God leading us? So you monitor and evaluate, and sometimes you modify, and sometimes you just recommit what we're doing is working. Kentucky Fried Chicken doesn't sell hamburgers. Okay? They figured out that their gig is chicken. Okay? Now, we're sort of medical evangelism is our gig. And that's what we think we do well. Okay, we have time for questions. You may have stories that you want to share of experiences you have where we've not treated our brethren in other parts of the world or our country with the dignity and respect they deserve, and what are the consequences? Anybody? Yes, ma'am.
How do you identify where you're going to go, the locations you're going to go, and do you go anywhere where there isn't already an established home church?
Okay. All right. When we expanded a few years ago, we visited with missionaries that we knew in country and said, where do we need to go? We identified some of the least evangelized parts of Guatemala. That the coast where our surgical facility is, the population there has grown now, and we see a lot of patients. Up in the highlands, they're more remote, smaller communities. We may see 10 to 12 patients at the clinic, whereas 30 on the coast. So we recognize the highlands had a greater need. Now, if you start approaching this like an accountant and counting your dollars too closely, well, let's work where we can care for 30 patients a day, not 10. We recognize the need, but then we made survey visits into the communities. And we did visit local churches of Christ there and explain to them, here's what we'd like to do. We're looking for partners. So it was twofold. We'd already prayed. We involved others who knew, and then we went into that area and visited those churches and found the people to go. Lisa and Kimmel Dunham have now been there 10 years, and they're supported by the Meadowbrook Church family. Now, do we go where there are no churches? Yes, ma'am. La Fortuna didn't have a church when we started working in La Fortuna. If we see a church planting opportunity, it's usually because of the existing partnership with a church. You're in Moxo Quinto, and they say, we just baptized a brother over here in Totonicapan. No, and they like you to begin to serve that area. So we go into the community. If there's no church there, we visit with community leaders. We tell them what we want to do. Invariably, they accept us. Sometimes they accept us with words, don't back it up with actions, and it's not successful. But we'll see 1 to 4 new churches started each year as a result of this. Our clinic in San Basilio on the coast led to some Bible studies in a community in Nueva Concepcion. And in this past July, that congregation bought a piece of property so they can build a church building themselves. So yes, but we're intentional about it. We just don't go where we're invited. They need to know that it's for evangelism purposes. And for it to be successful, we have to have church members from a nearby community join us. And that's pretty sweet. We even have 12 different churches up in the highlands. They have gone together and pulled their own money, and they now support a local evangelist and send him in another part of Quiche. And then they say, he's working up here in Zacualpa. We'll help talents come with the medical evangelism team begin to serve this community. So that's sort of how when it works right, that's the way it unfolds. Yes, ma'am.
I was going to go a number of years ago now on one of your missions, but we didn't really have a place for a physical therapist. I was wondering where you're at with that.
All right. Well, I'm going to make you smile a lot. I've got a young man on scholarship studying physical therapy in Quetzaltenango, Guatemala. And Cynthia, will he graduate in November or next year?
I think this November.
November. Yeah. So we will, he will, because we only have one, okay, he will split his time between the highlands and the coast. But yes, we have a greater role for physical therapists, and we hope to send more to school, go back to growing our own. We recognize the need. All of our five-position mobile teams travel with a massage table. They use it as an exam table when they need it. But we can now do some exercise treatment, or massages ourselves with our health promoters. We've created the exercise sheets that physical therapists use and translated them into Spanish, so they all have them.
So do you have a physical therapist from America that go on your team?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, I had one in March. Usually have 3 to 4 a year. I have one that's sort of been an anchor out of Birmingham. He's helped us really develop this. We hope to have physical therapists, one on the coast and one on the highlands in the future.
Great, thank you.
You're welcome. Told you I'd make you smile. All right. Is this over at 4:15?
4:15.
We're pretty close.
Yeah.
Well, you sort of see my tagline. Hit that one more time. It says, now that you've seen them, can't you see why dignity matters? Okay? So, thank you for your time. My information is on these brochures. Cynthia can give you hers, but we appreciate those of you who already partner with us. Those who are